Yeah, it was in the calendar on, I think it was in the newsletter on Sunday too. But my concern is that only NEPT people would have seen it and not the IRSPT and CMDS people. So,
yeah, that's where I found it on the June 17th newsletter. That's where I accessed it from.
Well, that's kind of why we put them there, but I just put a note out. Our person that does all that was having, they had a big storm last week, and she's in the Philippines, and she and this other guy that worked for us, and they had, like, you know, houses, trees falling into houses, and so they were out without it a lot last week, so it might have, you know, just slipped up, and they thought they set it up, and it didn't get set up. So anyway, we're here, so we can support whoever is here, and do you have any questions, comments, cases? Successes, anything you want to talk about?
Not off the top of my head. I've kind of fallen off the studying bandwagon at the moment just due to springtime and other activities. So I'm trying to get on that. I am going to give you a heads up. You should be receiving a Dutch test result from me this week.
Oh, yay!
I know.
So we can do it on whatever the next call is after this.
Right. Tell me again, you wanted the health tracker filled out?
For Dutch tests, no. No, only if you're doing blood work. If you're doing blood work, I want the health tracker filled out, yeah.
Okay.
But Dutch tests standalone, so we're good for that.
Cool.
Looks like we have a call, I think, next week is our, I think we have an open coaching call on what day? Yeah, on Thursday, next Thursday, so a week from, a little over a week. Go over it then. Cool. Great.
So, and I'm assuming that the results will then get emailed to me, or how's that
work?
Yeah,
usually the results come from the company, and Scott gets all the results of all the lab tests, and then he just sends an email to whoever's test it is, plus me, to say that it's in.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yay. Good. You learn a lot. It's always good to learn from doing it on yourself.
Thanks.
All right. Anybody else have questions or comments? Is that a couple of things I could just chat about if nobody else does? Just
some questions.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like Valerie has one. Valerie, hi.
Hi. Since it's a low attendance at the moment, I didn't get the email either. I was going to confirm that. I got it from the Sunday NEPT letter as well.
Well, that's where you're supposed to get it from, quite frankly. Well, we've
and
got
then I double-checked in the schedule.
Reminders, right?
Right.
But the people that are in IRSPT or CMDS don't get those, so they have to rely on the reminders or looking at their schedule.
But I did want to run one thing by you that's maybe a little off topic. You know, I had that issue in my shoulder blade and back. Mm-hmm. And it's been 6 weeks now, and it got worse. It changed, and then I started having numbness in my index finger and thumb, and I'm still getting a lot of adjustments, and I got more massage, and we've been really working on it, and I'm finally starting to see some improvement in the actual back and shoulder blade area. In the last 10 days. However, I'm still having numbness in my index finger and thumb. They did talk me into getting x-rays, mm-hmm. and they didn't see anything on the x-rays, and then they wanted me to get the MRI. Mm-hmm. And that was where I just kind of wanted to get some ideas of what to watch for, when would I pull the trigger and do an MRI, that kind of thing. But
a couple of things you could do, right? So there's nerve compression going on, and it's a specific nerve compression because it's those two fingers versus all your fingers. So that's,
right.
You know, one differential that those who are not trained in, you know, chiropractic, physical therapy, whatever, can use is somebody saying that, you know, their whole hand is numb, right, or their arm, you're starting to think, well, maybe it's metabolic, or if it's both sides, right, you're thinking metabolic. It could be a B12 deficiency, it could be MS. I mean, you know, that's not what I'm saying in your case, but I'm saying those are the things you start to think about when somebody says, I have this overall numbness or hand in both sides. You're talking two fingers on one side. So there's clearly a nerve compression going on, right? So you want to know, is it a nerve root compression, which is up, it would be in the neck, because the thumb and the forefinger would be innervated by the neck. And then, or is it a more distal kind of compression, like in the shoulder blade, in the chest muscles, et cetera. So those are differentials. A chiropractor should be able to do that test. They should be able to do an Apley's test, and there's a couple of other, what's his name? I'm forgetting the names of the tests because I don't use them that often, but I know the tests. But there's specific tests to test for thoracic outlet syndrome, which might be in your particular case because of having shoulder pain. So there's nerves that come through from the neck that go through the chest muscles and down into the arm. And so it could be a compression there. It could be a compression in the forearm. So there's a lot of places where it could be. So an MRI would show if there's like a disc bulge or anything at all that would be pressing on the nerve root up there. Another study called an EMG, which is an electromyogram, I think is what it stands for, but it's basically a nerve conduction study of, they basically are putting little electrodes in to see where the nerve conduction gets blocked. So those are two different tests that you could do. Hard to say whether it would be in the neck. I'm just suspicious that it's more of the thoracic outlet because of the way you described it, and it started out in the shoulder blade area. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and he did press on my head in several different ways, checking to see if that was painful. Mm-hmm. And I've had some really strange pain under my arm and into the pec muscle.
Mm.
Sounding something like what you were describing.
Thoracic outlet type of thing, right.
Yeah, and then the pain shooting down my arm on the underside as well. But that's all changing, so it's been really hard to pin it down, so I'm really hoping it's getting better, and I will get the feeling back in my fingers. But
yeah, because with the discs just, right, if it was a disc, the only thing that will show on the MRI, I think, is a disc or a lesion, tumor, you know, anything like that, that would be space-occupying something that's pressing on the nerve.
Right.
Right, and if it's not that, then you're going to be, okay, what is it? It's probably peripheral. I don't know what test you did for thoracic outlet, but I do tests to determine, well, is it the scalenes muscle? Is it the pect minor muscle? So there's various tests that can be done to determine that peripherally. And then what I tend to do when I was working with people on that stuff would be I would do some work on like the pect muscle, if that was it, or the scalene muscle. And there's a technique called spray and stretch. There's a book by Travell, T-R-A-V-E-L-L, on myofascial release work. There's actually another one that is a layperson's version of that book, which would give you all the different points that you could get work on based on the nerve. Like they give you an idea of the distribution of the pain and numbness, and you can kind of pinpoint which of the muscles it might be, and then they give you self-correction techniques that you can do on those specific muscles or that you could give your massage therapist to work on. And Lynn knows the name of that book. It's just called like Trigger Points something. And it's this little paperback book for $15 you can get on Amazon that might help you to take better charge of your own situation there.
Okay, great. Right? Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think, you know, what you bring up is, you know, it's related to you and it's not related to nutrition per se, but what it is related to is when people come to us with specific symptoms and we're looking like, you know, neuropathy or nerve pain or numbness, those kinds of things, paresthesias is what the technical term for it is, can be caused by a mechanical obstruction or it can be caused by a central obstruction, right? Like a nutritional imbalance like B12, right? Or some sort of a autoimmune thing. So it's really helpful for us as nutrition type of practitioners, functional type practitioners, to be able to discern between those things. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Right.
So when it's bilateral, both sides, and it's top and bottom, that's really clear. It's probably a metabolic issue or a central spinal issue. But when it's one side and it's like two fingers, that's usually related to a particular nerve, whether it's a nerve root or a nerve at a distance. The module that we have on structure I don't remember which one it is. I think it's like module 35 or something. We talk about some of that stuff. And if you want, you know, some more information, you can go there.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Bye. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Lynn just put up the link, Valerie. Oh no, that's the full myofascial one. That's the $150 book. But there's another one that's by, I think it's by a physical therapist, and it's a little paperback book that's on Amazon as well. All right. So Laura, oops, I opened the wrong line.
Hi.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have a question, regarding, it's not a client, it's my son. He just returned. Well, yes. He just finished 4 years of college, and he went in as an athlete, slim and trim and gluten-free and dairy-free, and he came out pasty, bloated. He's probably gained 30 pounds, and this is like in the last year. He's no longer an athlete. He doesn't do any exercise. But the things that really bother me that I know that they mean something is he has, purple stretch marks. I mean, like dark purple, and his hair is really greasy within maybe a couple hours after he washes it.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's eating cafeteria food, I'm assuming, instead of mom's good home cooking.
Well, yes, but also he had, even eating at school, he was gluten-free and dairy-free.
Oh.
And so, but in the last year, he's gone back to eating all those things because of a girl, of course. You're a mom of sons. You get this. Those dang girls. But she has a very unsophisticated palate. And not healthy minded at all.
Mm.
And he looks a wreck. But of course he's not seeking my advice.
He's not seeking your advice. It's a tough one, right? And
yeah.
Does he realize that he isn't looking good? And
I'm not sure. I mean, like, I've kind of brought up a couple things a while back, but you know, it's a sensitive thing, and then the girl complicates things. So,
sure.
But
oh,
in any
boy.
Case, yeah. So just wondering if those things, you know, the stretch marks and the greasy hair, if that made you think of anything, because I feel like he is in poor health, and I don't know quite how to.
Yeah. Address it. So, first of all, I feel your pain, and I understand that. But the thing is, unless you have this like amazing relationship with him where you've always been honest and he, you know, he's okay with it. He's not overly sensitive. You can't go up to him and say, you look awful. You know, you look unhealthy. You have stretch marks. You have greasy hair and you're 30 pounds overweight. What can I do to help you? Because that's a way to alienate a kid, right?
Right.
So
well, we always have had a great relationship up until the last year.
Yeah. When the girl came.
Yeah, the girl.
Ugh. Yeah. And you can't badmouth the girl, right? You can't criticize her for not being health conscious. But then it's just, you know, your mom who's, you know.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation. So as far as what could be, so, you know, probably fats are way out of balance, right? So. He's overproducing sebum. His body's out of balance. So I'm sure his omega-3-6 ratios are out of balance. He's come back to all the sours, the stuff like gluten and dairy, and you've had him off of it for years and he's sensitive to it. He's creating an inflammatory response in his body. Stretch marks are a little curious. The stretch marks usually are there after a rapid weight, like pregnancy, right? It's like you gain 30 pounds, 40 pounds in pregnancy and suddenly you get these stretch marks. The fact that there's so purple might indicate that there's some kind of vascular integrity issue, that his capillaries are fragile. So the stretching is causing kind of an internal bruising. So that
what does that mean?
Vitamin C, bioflavonoids, you know, all those nutrients that support good collagen production could be.
Okay.
I'm just guessing, you know, just having
right.
what you're telling me, but that's to me, like, usually you see that with huge weight gain, and maybe he did gain the weight quickly as opposed to slowly
yes.
over the 4 years. So,
yes.
yeah. So I would
okay.
say that he probably has some vitamin C deficiencies. He probably has some fatty acid deficiencies. Anything that affects skin, you know, possibly zinc. Those sorts of things would be what I'd be looking for. But again, I mean, you have to think about carefully how do you speak to him without jeopardizing, you know, and alienating him. And it's a fine line, right? Do you jeopardize the relationship for his health? But if you say stuff, you jeopardize the relationship. He's not going to listen to you anyway, right? Unless you can really connect with him and express your concern and get his buy-in to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you don't handle it delicately, you risk him staying in this unhealthy state and alienating you. So that's where it's a tough situation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that gives me, I mean, I know that he's really unhealthy, but, like, where to be thinking about it and, I guess, how diligently to encourage him to, you know, maybe have some tests. Because he's not going to listen to me at
right.
this point so much. But a test, you know, numbers, they don't lie.
They don't
well,
lie. Is he open to doing that? I mean, if I said to my kid, I wanted you to get put to me and get blood out of me, thank you very much. So that's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you're willing to front for him to get tests, obviously he's not going to want to pay for it himself. So if you're willing to pay for him, what would I get? You know, I might get a because it's easy to get.
I'm sorry, what would you get?
A blood spot fatty acid, perhaps, to give you an idea, because it gives you the idea that the omega-3 6 balance, which is so important for any kind of inflammatory condition, right? But also, and most likely if he's been eating crap for the last year, he's going to be off. But also it gives you an idea based on the differences between, you know, like the short chain and the long chain, certain vitamin and mineral deficiencies, because those are required for the enzyme to do the conversion. So that might be an easy, inexpensive starting point to just say, look, you know, you've been eating all these fats at school. I'd be happy to front for you to get this test. And there's some simple things we could do. And even just getting them on a fish oil supplement or algae oil supplement could help. It's not going to solve the problem, but it could certainly help circumvent some of the long-term side effects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much for just giving me a little direction on all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck with that. I feel for you. Because that's, like, what is he, like 23, 24? 22. 22, yeah.
Knows it all.
Oh, they do. They do. I have one on either end of that. I have a 24 and a 20. And yeah, they do. And you know, with mine, he gained a little bit of weight in his senior year. I mean, he'd always been very, very thin. And, you know, it's not like he's obese or anything, but he just has a little extra that he shouldn't have. And I see him eat more carb. He's very careful. He doesn't eat anything refined. But he eats a lot of gluten. He's never had a gluten sensitivity that we know about, but I don't like it. But he's a lot more of that than he used to. But I can't talk to him. I can't say, honey, your pants are a little tight there, honey. You want to, you know, because he's the super sensitive type, and it would really jeopardize our relationship. So I just go, oh, you want me to send you some food? Oh, I can send you some vitamins. And he'll take that stuff. So that's what I can do. Yeah. Good luck with that. I feel for you.
Thank you. I appreciate your input. I do have another question if you don't have other people.
Sure, there's
waiting.
Just one other person waiting with a question, but we can go for yours and then go for hers. There's only a couple right now.
Okay. So I have a new client that she has always had trouble with her weight, and She just sort of cleaned up her diet. She's from a very large family, so she cleaned up her diet, and then she, you know, what we would call a clean diet, and she lost 50 pounds effortlessly.
Whoa.
And yeah, and just, you know, through like some different stuff, she realized she's allergic to a lot of foods.
Mm-hmm.
And in any case, so she's kind of going up and down and figuring all that out. But in the meantime, she has really high testosterone, but none of the symptoms, none of the characteristics. I mean, she doesn't have facial hair or, you know, or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that, I mean, the only thing that I could, so the other piece of that is that her functional doctor put her on a supplement or, you know, some kind of testosterone pill, whatever.
Oh,
and then
why she would have high testosterone.
I'm sorry. I said that mistakenly. Some hormone pill to balance that.
Oh,
well, right. Turns out she just sent me an email this morning that she said that she went to the doctor last week, and that's actually what's been making her sick, because she's like, she lost all this weight and was doing really well, but then all of a sudden everything made her sick again. So now she's off of the supplement, but in order to balance that hormones, would like, you know, would something like seed cycling be enough, or what?
Yeah, so it depends on, like, how are her estrogen and progesterone levels. So she's got high testosterone. You want to also look at estrogen and progesterone and the ratio between estrogen and testosterone, but also between estrogen and, now does she have high estrogen? Because, you know, that's a, you'd have to look at that too. So
yeah,
cycling can certainly be an option. Have you had a Dutch test done on her to find it out, or is it a blood level testosterone?
You know what? She is a new client, and she's actually seeing a really, she's being seen at a really well-known clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why she wants my help, but she's young, and I think she has all this information, but she's stuck. She's afraid of what to do. So she's not eating anything.
Yeah, she's afraid.
And so yeah, that's actually why she has me. But
why she's seeing you. Because, the functional medicine docs don't spend a lot of time on diet and helping people really with their diet. They kind of give lists and say, here, go do this or go do this or avoid this. But it's kind of hard. So she's looking to you for that. I would say that I would look to see if she's had a Dutch and what kind of tests she's had to determine that, because there's a lot there, but it's really hard for me in a vacuum without knowing more.
Oh, of course.
But high testosterone is often associated with PCOS. So if she's had, you know, they don't have to have facial hair, but she could have, you know, have had trouble with her period. You know, hard to, I don't know if she's pregnant or has had children, but hard to get pregnant, irregular periods, missing cycles, PCOS comes to mind. And so I would look at, from your perspective, I would look at her glucose, fasting glucose, postprandial glucose, insulin, and hemoglobin A1C, and see if it's an issue that's potentially a PCOS situation.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. And don't forget to look at estrogen-progesterone ratios, because usually the estrogen is a lot higher than the progesterone in that case.
Okay. And so, you know, I actually don't know a lot about the ratios and what they're supposed to be.
Well, that's where the test comes in, like knowing what kind of test. I'm not a blood tester. I don't do blood tests for hormones. I usually do urine. So I'll either do Dutch tests or in the past I do the Meridian Valley test. And they'll give you, you'll see, it's a really beautiful report, and it shows you what the wheels are and what the ratios are and what they should be.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kim. Kim had her hand up. Hi, Kim. Kim in Connecticut? Nope, you just closed your line. Okay, looks like you'd put your hand down. I guess you didn't want to talk. All right. Who else? Let's see what's in the chat. Oh, Lynn said, I think they changed things as my web call showed up differently. I hadn't noticed that, but maybe they did. It's interesting because they were supposed to change a lot of stuff in the summer and coming soon, and they're actually supposed to have video and screen share soon. So I'm excited about that to see how that works.
I did put a question in the Q&A.
Okay. So Kim said question about stevia side effects. I don't ever see those. I haven't seen any negative side effects from liquid stevia. I think, stevia is a plant, right? Just like mint. Just like any plant, some people can be sensitive to it and some people cannot, and it can certainly affect everybody in a different way. I don't know that I have never seen anybody have a nervous system side effect from stevia. And is it the liquid only stevia, or is it the whole green dehydrated stevia versus the white stuff? And they're all very different. And I think that your best bet with stevia is to grow it fresh and eat it fresh. Second would be to get the green powder, the dehydrated leaves. Third would be the liquid, because they basically take the leaves and they cook them down into a liquid. The ones that, like sweet leaves, that don't add anything to it, some of them add alcohol and other kinds of things to them, so I don't use those. And then I don't really think about the white stuff as being a viable alternative anyway. So if you think that somebody's having a reaction to anything, the typical thing that I would recommend is you remove that substance and then you watch for a while. And if that effect goes away and then you add that substance back in and the effect comes back, it most likely was related, right? You can do this three strikes you're out deal where you take it out and then put it back in. And if it's three times, then you know for sure. But usually if you just take it out and put it back in and they get the result, that same result is probably a reaction. So whenever you suspect a reaction, I take people off of it. But nothing that I know of particularly that I've ever encountered. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Questions? Comments? Star 2 raises your hand. Susan. Hi, Susan.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're hearing me?
I hear you. There's a little bit of a, no, not anymore. There was a little bit of like a reverberation, but not anymore.
Okay. I got a question regarding my mom. She's 82, and so far until recently has not been on any meds, which is a miracle.
It's great.
But, due to her age, her doctor felt her blood pressure was a little bit high and put her on, I think it's Lisinopril. So I asked her if she'd be open to maybe another possibility, and I'm trying to remember what it was you said. Was it berberine?
Berberine more lowers blood sugar. There's a number of things that can help with blood pressure. I mean, and again, it's really knowing situation. Even something simple as magnesium. Magnesium deficiency can lead to it. I have a problem with doctors. I know hypertension is a problem, but mild hypertension is probably less dangerous than the drugs, right? So I think there's things you can do with her naturally. I mean, certainly all the diet stuff you know about, but looking at her magnesium levels, I mean, just getting somebody on magnesium can help relax those things, and that's a mild thing in the calcium-magnesium ratios. Natokinase, a little bit more, strong when it comes to that, and you just want to be careful if the person has a tendency to have thin blood. You don't want to give them too much because it can thin out things too much, but it actually helps break down clot formation and all. So natokinase is one. There's a supplement from a company called Restorative Formulations, called, I think it's just called HTN with some number, restorativeformulations.com. If you go there and you log in, they need you to have a practitioner account. If you don't have one, you should have to be a licensed practitioner. You can use mine and then just set up your own account under it, and they're going to ask you for a code. So everybody can write this down. It's 512-349-9677. That's the code that will allow you to set up an account with me as the practitioner on restorative formulation. And then you can see they have I think it's called HTN. And I think they may have two of them, the extra strength and the regular. You probably want to just start with the regular and just start with one. But magnesium is where I would generally start. I'd look at allergy stuff and, you know, stress stuff and heart mass and all that sort of stuff. How high was it? Do you know?
She couldn't remember, and I know I saw it like 6 months ago, but it didn't strike me as alarming by any means. You know, it was a little bit above whatever the range is, which, you know, that's even questionable.
Yeah, but I think you gotta honor that range. But it's also honoring it with, what about diet and lifestyle? And that's the stuff that you want to
talk
about. I mean, even just doing a heart mass can bring it down by 10 points within.
Yeah, I don't know how far I'm going to get with that. She's always been a good eater as far as the standard American diet's concerned. She's, and now she's lost a lot of weight. That concerns me. And I see her losing muscle mass now. She's quite thin.
Mm.
She likes her veggies. But I don't know that I'm really going to be able to.
Well, then doing that, right? She's already eating a lot of veggies. She's not on the standard American diet, because that's the starting point, right? I would think about getting her some magnesium. Get her a liquid ionic magnesium that's easy. She can just put a little bit in water, or get her some. You know, you have to be careful with magnesium if you don't know her bowel history, right? So you don't want to get her on a magnesium citrate and have her in the toilet all the time either.
Well, I could coach her on that.
Yeah, you could coach her on that. So you can get her. I would start with magnesium.
So I guess my question then is, if she starts on this and it is affecting her blood pressure, what am I looking for? Will she suddenly start having lower blood pressure?
Yeah, her blood pressure will go lower. And, you know, ask her to tell you if she starts to get dizzy or lightheaded, or when she goes from seated to standing, she starts to feel a little off, right, dizzy, that sort of stuff. That's the signs of hypotension.
So right? how do we get her off her meds?
You just go to the doctor and you say, you know, first of all, I just go to get her a blood pressure cuff so she can do this easy one at home. Even the wrist cuff, they're not as accurate, but it's something that she could just easily measure on at home, or you could do with her. Or you go to the HED and they have a machine and you measure it, and you go to the doctor and say, hey, you know, my blood pressure is 90 over 60. I think I need to get off my medication.
Perfect.
Yeah, blood pressure is easy because you can monitor it, and I highly recommend everybody has some self-monitoring. We're going to be doing a two-day live stream for the public in place of SIV, since we didn't do it this year in July. And one of the things we're going to do is, what should your home test kit look like? What are all the things you should do to take charge of your health? And I think everybody should have some sort of blood pressure monitoring kit, a blood sugar monitoring kit, you know, things that allow you to take charge, that, you know, we're self-empowered healthcare is the term I like to use. And that's what I really want to help people to do. So everybody should have a blood pressure cuff. You can get a cheap one for the wrist. It's easy. It's not as accurate. You can get one that goes around the arm, but they're made to be able to do it yourself. Are they as accurate as something you get at the doctor's office? No, but it gives you a general idea if there's a pattern. I always tell people, if you take your blood pressure and it looks like it's either too high or too low, you've done it on a home unit, do it two more times. What if you heard that one before? What else have I said that about, right?
Yeah.
Blood sugar. Because they're just cheap little pieces of equipment, so they may just not every time be accurate. So you take it, you see a weird result, you do it two more times. And if you see three low results, and you go, Doc, hey, I think I, you know. And she could just say to him, her, say, look, I don't want to be dizzy like this. I'm going to skip a day's medication. Is that okay? You know, and so the way typically people wean off blood pressure medication, at least when I've worked with them, is they're taking their blood pressure medication every day and they start to get these changes. So they go to once every other day. So morning of day one, evening of day two, skip day three, morning of day four, right? And they just keep doing that. And then they still are okay. Then they go to every other day and then they go to every third day and eventually they just don't need it anymore.
Well, yeah, what really caught my attention is I was listening to something and they were talking about this particular blood pressure medicine increasing heart attack by like a third. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's crazy. When you really look at the side effects of this stuff, it's totally insane that a doctor would even consider offering that to someone, especially in that age group where their risk is higher to begin with, without addressing diet and lifestyle. It's exactly. Criminal. It's not just appalling, it's criminal. I believe. I'm very outspoken about it. I think it's criminal.
Okay, cool.
Okay, good.
I have another question too, but let somebody else go. And if there's
all right,
time,
I've got two more and then we'll come back to you. So I'll put your hand down and you can put it right back up again so then you'll be in the queue, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks. All right, so I'm closing Susan. And I have Lynn and then Laura. Lynn?
If you want to go to Laura or answer Susan's other question, that's okay. I actually had a question about myself. So.
No, it's okay. Laura put her hand down, and then Susan will come back to it. Oh. So you get a turn, too, so go for it.
Okay. Well, I don't normally look at my face. And so Sunday I looked at my face, and I noticed I just had never noticed this mark on my face before. And I'm trying to be curious about it rather than give in to fear that it could be some type of skin cancer or melanoma. And so I'm wondering what other things could I look at or look for in doing it. It's near my ear, so I can't really see it real well. I mean, you know, it's like I turn my head to look and...
Right, so it goes away. So first of all, I would have someone in your family take your phone and take a picture of it for you.
Okay.
All right, so get in bright light so that it's real easy to see. And you want to look at margins, right? If it's brown, mm-hmm. right? Is it a mole? It could be a mole. You just never noticed it there before. Is it raised? Right? Is it
well,
raised?
It is slightly, and the color from what I can see, I mean, because, you know, if I put my finger over it, you know, I can tell where it is,
mm-hmm.
And from the color of it, it's kind of a reddish brown. I can't see the margins real well.
Yeah.
And
so that's where I would have somebody just stand, have your husband do it. Stand in the bright light, you know, and shine the light on it and just have him take a picture of it so you can look at it. And he can help you too. I mean, he's medically trained as well, so he's going to be looking at it too.
Yeah.
Take a look at it, right? And then the thing about it is, you know, if you've never noticed it before, you don't know if it's changed in shape. But once you know, you can look to see, you can kind of have him measure it. And see how big it is and see if it's growing or shrinking. Is it tender to touch?
No.
Things that are scary are generally not tender to touch. So, right, cancers generally are. And is it, well, that's not true of skin cancers as much with the movable versus not. But
if
it's a lump somewhere, you'd want to see is it movable or is it fixed? And generally cancerous things are fixed. So they won't move around. So if it's like, you know, a lipoma, for example, you see a bump in your fatty tissue and you can, you know, pick it up and jiggle it around. It's generally not going to be a cancerous type thing. It's more of a lipoma, but cancerous things are usually fixed. So those are the things I would look for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went online to get an idea of what it might look like, as well as, you know, if it is, what do I do? And and again, you know, it's right by my ear, so I'm like, okay, I'm thinking of the other pieces too. So am I not hearing something? It's also in relation to that you know, chakra area with my mouth and my throat, so am I not saying mm-hmm. something? Mm-hmm. And it's also part of my face, which is my intuition. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to just be curious about that, this, and not get all freaked out, although I will admit to being, what?
Freaked out. Right. And, you know, the
a
thing
freaked out.
Out it when you see something like that, you don't know how long it's been there. It might only have been there a week, right? It could just be like a pimple of some sort or, you know, not
or a bug bite.
Bug bite, you know, that sort of thing, right? So, you know, I would just take some breaths and just be curious,
yep.
like you said, but get a picture of it and then start looking around and seeing what it might be. I mean, it could be reddish brown. It could be, it could be any, I mean, it could be a scab over a mosquito bite that you scratched. You know what I mean?
Right.
It could be anything until you see it. And then, you know, when you look at it, look at, you know, what melanomas are. It could be, if it is something like that, it could be a basal cell. It could be a,
right. That you realize there are different kinds.
Yeah. Yeah. And the worst of the melanoma, with the squamouses and the basal cells, you know, I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is black salve.
Right. I've got some, so.
Yeah. So, you know, and they come out. So, but I would identify it because if it is kind of melanoma, the black salve may get rid of that lesion, but it may be something that's in the system. But so you
right, it's finding out the root cause of, you know, what's creating this imbalance in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's,
And you've been detoxing, right? You've been doing this cleansing stuff, so it could be.
Well, I thought about that as well.
Popping out.
Yeah. I thought about that as well. Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted some ideas. And then the other thing is, real quick, what was that code you gave for restorative?
Oh, it's 512-349-9677.
Okay.
Thank you. Phone number. That's what they set it up as.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, and they can just go in and set up an account. And I know we had some ability with folks in NEPT where we could set up accounts with restorative. I don't remember the exact rules about that, but we had to tell them that certain people were qualified.
Yeah, I sent them a list of those that were in NEPT.
Okay. Got it.
So, all right.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So we got Lynn. Let's go to Laura and then Susan. Hi, Laura.
Hi, it's me again. So the one gal was asking about her mom and high blood pressure in her. And so there's, I have a number of people that talk to me, oh, but I can't do that because I have high blood pressure. And I realize that changing their diet is really the first step in, you know, cleaning up things. But they're so freaked out about salt, yet go out to eat, and I don't know what they think that, you know, they're
so
not going
to use. They're freaked out about not putting extra salt on their own food when they make it, but you're saying they go out to eat and they just eat whatever's served?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, loaded with salt, preservatives and bad oils. And yeah, education, it's so important. Community education. I want everybody to just start, like, picking up and go to the library and go to the community centers, go into church groups and just talk and just share and just share and just share. People need to get their minds opened about this.
Yes. You know what? I agree with that. But then, like, people will be like, well, where's the studies? And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
There's tons of them. I mean, go to Michael Greger's book and pick that up. Pick up Michael Clapper's book. Pick up Neil Bernard's. You know, any of their books are loaded with references that talk about the connection between diet and health. They've done the heavy lifting for you.
Well, this is to salt in particular.
Yeah. Well, the salt, you know, that it's controversial because it's going to be different from person to person. Right.
Yeah.
If somebody's adrenally fatigued and they have hypertension, is unusual because they wouldn't usually, but then they may need the salt. So the salt is not the villain. It's the underlying imbalances that are, and some people are sensitive to salt, and the salt raises their blood sugar, I mean blood pressure. They need to have some water. Others are not, and they need it in order to get their energy back, in order to heal. So, the salt, there's studies that go either way. But I'm not talking just the salt. I'm talking just the general principles. And you can speak about salt that way. You can say, well, some people are going to be super sensitive. And but if you have high blood pressure, I would watch the salt. And, which, you know, if you are going to use salt, only use small amounts of sea salt and, you know, eat high salt foods as opposed to that to get your sodium. But you can talk about that, but there's so much more people need to know. They need to know that that eating in restaurants is generally a hazard.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know a lot. Get out there and share it.
Thanks. So when you said high salt foods, so they don't react the same way in your body as salt that you add to food?
No, because it's sodium, it's chloride, it's potassium. The foods have all of those electrolytes and minerals in them. Celery, sea vegetables.
Because it's a whole food, right?
A whole food.
In fact,
right? We get in trouble when, and I'm not a big fan, I don't think eating table salt and eating a lot of salt is a good thing. Salt is a refined food. Unless you take it from a whole sea, you know, you take it from a rock that came from the sea. That's a lot different. But still, you got to be careful about that because it's imbalances. But food is where things come from. And sure, excess of certain foods and nutrients from foods can be problematic too. But the point is that we need to be eating whole foods in the same way that sugar as part of an apple is very different than if that sugar is extracted out and put into a jar and told people to eat a spoonful of it, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with oils, right? People are big into oil as if coconut oil, olive oil, all these things are healthy things. Like, I'm not saying they're necessarily bad for everybody, but they aren't whole foods, right? We talk about whole grains. Don't eat the whole, you know, eat the whole grain. Don't eat the fine grain. But what about the oil? Well, let's eat olives if we want the nutrients in the olives rather than just the oil. The oil doesn't have all the nutrients. It just has the oil part. Right. And there's times therapeutically when I'll put somebody on a specific oil that they may need. And especially if they're very thin, they're emaciated, they may have, you know, some situation going on that they can't digest. You know, there's time for it therapeutically. But in terms of food, let's just eat whole foods. Right. I eat olives. I eat coconuts. I eat avocados. I eat flax seeds. I eat chia seeds. I eat nuts and seeds. I don't do their oils. I'm not saying I'm 100% perfect and I never do oils. I'll eat something that has olive oil in it but I'm really, I don't proactively put that stuff in my food. I eat the real thing. I want olives. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to throw some olives on my salad.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
Well, I think that's what we just need to teach people to do is to eat real whole foods. And for most people, 90% or more of their problems are going to go away when they just switch to whole real food.
Yes.
Make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Good question. Thank you, Laura. And Susan.
Hey. Hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I've got thyroid questions for myself. Seeing as I just recently learned about Google to enhance the T4-T3 conversion, and I am underconverting, I have added Google to my arsenal, but I'm not sure of dosing the amount, how much, how often.
That's a good question, and I don't have that memorized. I think I have those listed in the thyroid booklet. Do I have that listed in there?
I thought I looked, and it's mentioned, but I'll go back and look. I didn't think I saw dosage down there, dosing.
I'd have to go look that up. Good sources to look that up would be, who's a good source? You might look up on the Herbalist and Alchemist site, David Winston, who studies that stuff, and he's good with dosing.
David Winston. Okay.
Yeah. And then usually if you get a tincture, are you doing tincture or are you doing a capsule powder?
I was doing capsules.
Yeah, so I would go, you know, usually for most capsules it's 1 to 3 a day. But, you know, it depends on what it is. But I don't know it off the top of my head. That's going to vary from person to person, too, based on their weight, based on how much their conversion is off, based on the other factors that are interfering. You know, is it a stress-related thing, too much cortisol, et cetera?
Right. That's I'm going to find that out with the Dutch test. In the past, it was, but that was like 3 years ago, and I don't know where I'm at with that after doing Sweet Spot and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, it changes a lot.
Thyroid's gone a little wonky, and I'm not pleased about that. And I have an appointment with my doctor tomorrow, and she's going to want to up it. And part of me wants to up it because I think I'll feel better, and part of me wants to be stubborn and figure this out without it.
Have you uploaded your thyroid labs yet? Brian,
no, I haven't. I've got them in front of me.
Yeah. Well, okay, you can tell me them, and then that's the other thing. I would upload them. That would be putting into the master tracker and do that with your Dutch test for the call next week, because that'll give me a fuller picture. So tell me some of your numbers.
Well, my
TH. What kind of thyroid are you on?
I'm on a compounded T3, T4.
Okay. All right.
My TSH is 3.5, so it's high.
Mm-hmm.
My free T4 is 0.93, so it's low-ish. And my free T3 is 2.4, which is even lower. So it's just,
yeah. So definitely conversion issue. What about your total T4?
That number is not in my thyroid scale diagram.
Okay, yeah. It should be in your thing, though. It should be in the test.
Oh, I have it somewhere, but I don't. Yes. What'd you say? Total T4?
Yeah.
5.4.
Okay, so that's low. So here's, let me tell you why I wanted to know that number. Because you told me that your total T4, your free T4 is low. So I want to know, is your free T4 low because you are, you have too much thyroglobulin and you have a higher level of total, but not enough of it's being unbound? But your total is low. So that picture says that, yeah, increasing your dosing is going to be helpful. So that just that said, that picture says, yeah, you're low. It's a hypothyroid. But why, right? So you've done an iodine load test to see if you have deficiency of iodine.
Not yet. It's on my wish list, and I was going to probably do that in the very, very near future.
Beautiful. That'll tell you whether that's an issue. Do you have antibodies?
I have one of them. I have antibodies, but not TPO.
So you have antithyroglobulin. Do you know what the level is?
In January, they were 12.
Okay. So on the lower side. Okay. Where were they before? Have they been over the years? Have they come down the same?
They hadn't been tested.
Oh, they hadn't been tested before. All right.
No, so I have been
working. You need to be working on your gut, and you need to be working on whatever shows up for stress-wise on there and blood sugar. So I don't know where your blood sugar is, but if what's your fasting? What's your hemoglobin A1C? Those are my two starting ones.
Well, I've made huge progress in all of that, but I will revisit that. And I did lots of gut stuff, but I will revisit that also because I think there's just levels to this of going back and tweaking.
Right, because if you have leaky gut, then it's really finding the stressor, right?
Yeah.
So what's the cause of the antibodies? Why is your body attacking? So it could be the leaky gut. That has to be worked on. Blood sugar imbalance, that has to be worked on. Adrenals, that has to be worked on. Are there heavy metals involved here? Is there a hidden viral infection? So if you have your full lab testing, put it in the master tracker, upload it for next week's call with NEPT call, and we'll go over it.
Well, okay, so I was thinking on the right track. I was kind of looking at all those things.
Yep, absolutely. You know what you're talking about. You've learned a lot, and you're real good at applying it. So those are the things I would be looking at.
Cool. All right.
Okay. Now, I looked up Google. It looks like 500 milligrams might be a good starting dose.
Well, I've been taking that once a day.
Good.
So, okay.
Yeah, and you're not going to know if it's the right dose until you get it retested, right? So,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks. Thank you much.
Bye. All right. Any other questions? We're looking at Q&A to see if there's any there. Nope. Any in the chat? Valerie asked, what did Susan say for under conversion? She's taking Google, G-U-G-G-U-L, not G-O-O-G-L-E. Okay. Yeah. All right. I don't see anything else. Anybody else? I'm just going to share just a little bit of something I'm excited about. I just got my Freestyle Libra, which is a continuous glucose monitor. And you basically wear a little, like you can't see me. I'll post it. I'm going to do a Facebook Live and show you guys. But I have this little, what do you call it? Not a receptor, little monitor thing that sticks on my arm, right? A sensor that sticks on my arm. And then anytime I want to test my blood sugar, I just hold it over. Nope, I just tested it. No prick, no nothing. And then it'll hold up to 8 hours of data in between me downloading it to the little meter thing. And so if I go to sleep, I'll test my blood sugar before I go to sleep. I could test it again when I wake up. And all that stuff in between is captured. And it's quite interesting to watch. I've been watching it, what happens when I sleep, what happens when I eat certain foods, what happens when it's higher after eating and then I want to lower it. I can do some heart math or meditating and bring it down. What happens with exercising, and I found out the other day, over-exercising. So I had just fasted, so I was, you know, shouldn't have been exercising as heavily as I was. And I just said, I'll keep testing it throughout. And I got up to 108 from in the 70s within, you know, 10 minutes of doing like some really intense piece. So I backed off and I just started just doing the same weights and everything throughout the exercise. But I did it, with less intensity. I breathed more in between. I did the rep slower and my blood sugar came back down. So I got to watch the effect, and it's a really cool thing to work with people. I just wish they were easier to get to work with people and see how all their activities are actually affecting their blood sugar. So if anybody has the opportunity to get one, you have to have a doctor's prescription. I was able to order one for my husband and give him a prescription, but then I stole it, so he doesn't have it. But I got a friend of mine who's an MD locally, he's going to write me a prescription so I could get one for him because I took his. But, yeah, anybody, you basically, the company doesn't care what the diagnosis is. So the insurance companies won't pay for it unless you have a diagnosis of diabetes. And most of them, like Medicare, will pay for it if you have diabetes and you're on insulin and they want to monitor it. But you can get it. The company doesn't care. Whatever diagnosis the doctor puts down, the doctor could put down insulin resistance, he could put down fatigue, whatever the diagnosis they want to, because they want to measure your blood sugar. So there's no restriction on that. The companies will just do it as long as they have a doctor's prescription. I don't know if they do it for like toenail fungus or anything like that, but they may. I have no idea. I just picked a diagnosis for him that made sense, like metabolic syndrome. So it's worth looking into. It's certainly, I think it was a great investment. Of course, I don't have insurance, so it doesn't pay for anything. But it was like $230, and I'm getting to just measure and watch and come up with all kinds of cool correlations between that and the finger stick and the ketone monitor. So it's just definitely worth looking into. I know a couple of you have said you were going to get them, so just wanted to share my experience with that. Any other questions or comments? Star 2 raises your hand. more questions, so I guess we're done for today. Thank you, guys. I'm going to open up your lines, and we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much for being here and for all your great questions, and we'll talk to you again next month. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.